Hello everyone and welcome to our new season and new episode. Today our topic is BRICS Plus and a New World Order. It's a great pleasure to welcome our guest Dr. Erik Sesne. Erik Sesne is a postdoctoral researcher in international relations and development studies at the University of Utrecht. Erik, welcome and it's a great pleasure to have you a second time in our studio.
Thank you very much, Aga. Second time here already. Good to be back.
Great. Looking forward to our conversation, Erik. And as I said, our topic is BRICS Plus, but considering our broad audience, maybe you can start with a general information. What is BRICS and what is the purpose of BRICS? Briefly, could you please explain for us?
Well, there has been a lot of talks and discussions about the BRICS, not least due to the most recent summit in South Africa, which led to the current expansion to six more members. But before delving into that, which we will later, I think it's important just to give a brief background on what the BRICS is. So the BRICS, they actually started all the way back in the early 2000s. It was a term coined by Jim O'Neill, who was an investment analyst at the bank Goldman Sachs. And then he coined this term as an investment category. So back then, Brazil, Russia, India, China, without the S yet. So they were regarded as the up-and-coming economies with large populations, large territories, which had great potential. So it was an investment category. And then this was harnessed by the countries themselves, initially at the UN. So now we just saw the heads of state, foreign ministers delivering their speech at the UN in the recent opening of the General Assembly a few weeks ago in September. And over the years, in the early 2000s, so the BRICS, the BRIC countries, they were meeting through foreign ministers at the UN. And in 2009, the BRIC became actually a grouping and they held their first summit at the level of the heads of state. So this was done in Yekaterinburg in Russia. So Russia actually was one of the main drivers for the formulation and the establishment of the BRICS. So since 2009, they held annual summits at the level of the heads of state. In 2010, precisely because of the lack of an African representative, they added South Africa, which was also convenient for the acronym because the BRIC became BRICS, which also has this idea of BRIC, actual material BRIC, so building a new order, challenging things that they found unfair in the international system, the lack of representation in economic institutions, the lack of voting rights in organisms such as the IMF, the World Bank. And important to say, so you teach international organizations that the BRICS wouldn't fit into a definition of intergovernmental organization because they don't have a secretariat, yeah. They don't have a criteria for admission, which formal intergovernmental organization would have. So they are more a grouping. They have some kind of institutionalization, especially from 2014 when they established the New Development Bank. Mm-hmm. But yeah, as we will talk later about the expansion, so there was no criteria there either. So they invited new members, but there was not a process where members applied and a criteria that they had to follow.
Great. Thanks a lot for this comprehensive background information. And indeed, moving to the new topic. So who are the new BRICS members? Maybe you can tell us. And what BRICS expansion, like BRICS Plus right now, means for the bloc's founding members?
Yeah, so before delving into that, so the BRICS was established in a context of rise of the South, and there was even a degree of excitement and enthusiasm, not least by Western powers, because 2009, right, so that was a time of a global financial crisis, so the rise of emerging powers was also perceived as a way to alleviate the burden when it comes to global affairs or when it comes to contributions, etc., development aid from the Western powers. But nowadays, the geopolitics is much more different. So the rise of China has been an important factor. And now currently considering tensions between China, the United States. So it's a completely different geopolitical scenario. And then back to your question there. So about the expansion of the BRICS. So the expansion of the BRICS has been prominently pushed forward by China. So it's been in the discussions in the BRICS for some years. So it's not something that emerged this year. So it's been going on. But this year, China, like hearing analysis of the meeting, so China really pushed for the expansion. And as you can see, the new members, so they admitted 6 new members: Argentina, Ethiopia, Egypt, Saudi Arabia, the United Arab Emirates, and Iran. So those were the 6 newly admitted members. And as you can see, like most of them, especially Iran, Saudi Arabia, United Arab Emirates, Egypt, so they are in the Middle East or Northern Africa region, geopolitically important for China, not least considering the Belt and Road Initiative, not least considering China's interest in the region, which was evidenced also by recent attempts to mediate relations between Iran and Saudi Arabia, which has been hostile over the years. And then Argentina basically was an effort by Brazil to include a fellow South American country, and the same for Ethiopia. So was prominently pushed for by South Africa to also have a fellow African country on board.
Why didn't they invite Turkey as well, considering it is an important role in the region and also globally?
Well, this is, of course, in the realm of speculation. So as I said earlier, mm-hmm. the BRICS is not a formal intergovernmental organization, meaning they don't have criteria to admit new members. So the admission turned out to be a political process. Mm-hmm. That meant that there was quite some degree of arbitrariety. So of course, many were, besides Turkey, so like the natural candidate seemed to be Indonesia, because Indonesia sort of ticked all the boxes, like a large economy, like with a large population regionally important. But interestingly, Indonesia
did not even want to be invited,
but there were discussions to invite Indonesia, but apparently they did not want to be invited.
Why? Do you know the reasons?
There are a few discussions about that. So they were, like, some say that they were uneasy to be part of a bloc prominently led by China, because China is the big actor. Mm-hmm. So part of the expansion is to create a bloc that is China-led, and China holds a lot of influence. So like the G7, right? The mm-hmm. G7 is a US-led bloc, and the BRICS as well. And that's also part of the rationale for
China. It's kind of a Cold War style, right? That now the China and the United States are a new Soviet Union and United States
competition. Yeah, exactly. And then back to your question about Turkey, right? So one can only speculate now, but Turkey as a founding member of NATO and OECD, which are some of the main pillars of Western governance. So in that logic, I would, in my opinion, of
skeptical
course,
on,
that would also raise some questions, although again, there was no criteria. Mm-hmm. And Turkey also could play a fundamental role, especially in a bloc that is more China-led, and then it's a bloc that is entangled also in all sorts of the geopolitical tensions that we have nowadays. And that was precisely the worry of Brazil, South Africa, because those countries, like reading analysis about what was happening, like behind the scenes, those countries were actually either against such an expansion or they favored a limited expansion, which would perhaps include only Indonesia, like some of the, you know, consensual actors that would make sense to include in the grouping given its geography. Because for Brazil, India, and South Africa, the fact that you add 6 more members, that you more than double the composition of the BRICS, means a loss of influence. So once you had for them this small group with a privileged channel with China, and now you have you have to share it with other members. And then, you know, as one country in a group of five, you have 20% of the power.
Yeah. But is it really equally divided then? Because as you said, China will dominate still, maybe together with Russia and India. But do you think the power division will be equally divided, or some members will be more equal than other members? What's your expectation on this?
Yeah, that's a great question. At the end of the day, when you look at the New Development Bank and when you look at who funds the BRICS, right? Mm-hmm. So the main funder is China. So therefore, also they hold a lot of sway and influence. So although in the summits you have the five members and they seemingly have equal space for discussions, they can also, so when a summit is held in Brazil or Africa, you also see the host country inviting regional players or neighboring countries in an attempt also to include the region, and that also plays into South African, Brazilian, Indian ambitions to establish themselves as regional leaders. But at the end of the day, like the main superpower and the main contributor, the one also contributing to the institutions is China. So that means that also they comparatively exert more power.
Great. And I'm also wondering whether there is a cohesion regarding this expansion, like common, let's say, line of agreement between the BRICS members. So my question is, did all the BRICS members agree to expand, or did they have a different and contrasting view? So do you know anything about this process of expanding, and whether they had a disagreement, maybe a particular member like Ethiopia or any other country?
Right. Yeah, so back to some of the things I mentioned earlier. So the topic has been in discussion for some time. So it's not something that started in the summit, the recent summit in South Africa, but in the latest summit is when there was really a pressure specifically by China to expand the grouping. Like, again, what I heard about behind the scenes diplomacy was that Brazil and India especially, those were the ones mainly contrary and against such an expansion. As I said, they would favor some kind of expansion, but a more limited one, not least because of the loss of prestige and the loss of power also that the expansion would enable. So one thing is to be part of a selected group. Another thing is that you have such a huge group. For instance, if you look at the G77, which is a group of developing countries, which mainly acts as a voting bloc at the UN, you know, under the idea of representing global South interests, it's so large that it becomes diluted and in a way ineffective. So that was also one of the arguments raised against the expansion of the BRICS. Another concern, especially by the so-called democratic BRICS, Brazil, South Africa, India, although democracies which have faced authoritarian tendencies in recent years, but nevertheless, democracies is also the fact that you add mainly authoritarian countries, Iran, Saudi Arabia, means that a lot of the democratic agendas, human rights agendas, those kind of topics, they would lose relevance, which is also quite tricky. For instance, if you look at Brazil, a country which has faced considerable challenges under Bolsonaro and even attempts of a coup d'etat, a country where elections were sort of based on the idea of reviving democracy, making sure that democracy pertains. And then on the international level, you are aligning yourselves with block of countries, and those kind of ideals, they somehow weighing down. So that was another concern raised.
Great.
Regarding the expansion.
And the final question regarding this democracy and maybe what's going on in Ukraine as well. So as we know, the BRICS member is, one of them is Russia, and the BRICS members are also quite skeptical regarding taking the side with Ukraine or try to be neutral or or more, maybe sometimes even pro-Russia. Mm-hmm. So do you think this expansion will strengthen the Russian discourse on Ukraine, or it might maybe enlighten and diversify and differentiate views on Ukraine, the position of BRICS members? So how would you expect? Of course, it's a bit too early to say, but what were your expectations?
Yet should be seen, but also important to highlight, although we hear about the BRICS when the heads of state meet in the yearly summits, but the BRICS are more than that. You know, there are many people don't know, but there are a range of initiatives, a range of meetings as well being held. So there are meetings by the foreign ministers, there are defense meetings, there are even civil society.
Between the BRICS members.
Yeah. So also not to underestimate the importance of such meetings. You know, while before the BRICS, there was no platform where South African, Brazilian, Indian delegates, they would meet to exchange. So the BRICS also offers those kind of spaces, right, for dialogue, for personal contacts, as a way to influence, etc. But when it comes to the conflict in Ukraine, this goes both ways. So it might be an opportunity for Brazil, South Africa, India to voice their concerns to Russia, but also an opportunity for Russia to further their own narrative.
Yeah, exactly.
Vis-a-vis the other BRICS. And then while Ukraine does not have the same spaces and does not have the same dialogue with countries, so remains to be seen. The fact that we are now under an extremely polarized geopolitical scenario, the Western perspective is in many corridors a negative one, because they perceive the BRICS as an anti-Western bloc. As I said earlier, while in the early 2000s there was a lot of enthusiasm, so BRICS as someone who could contribute to alleviate, you know, many of the burdens in the international system, as countries where one could invest, as countries that were growing. But nowadays, it's much more associated with an anti-Western bloc, you know, and in many ways, anti-democratic. So it is important, I think, in that regard, that countries like India, South Africa, Brazil, and therefore the idea to include Argentina
would maybe help.
Yeah, also help to balance a little bit. And it's unlikely that the expansion will stay with those six countries. Like more new members will be admitted. So
maybe we'll
have to see which countries and what are the dynamics in the next meetings. And also, like already this has some implications. So just to illustrate, with Argentina, they are having elections soon. And one of the favorites to win the elections is Javier Milei, which is quite a radical person, and has been talking about leaving the IMF and cutting ties with China. And one of his claims is that countries like China, Russia, Brazil, because they are part of the BRICS, they don't respect freedom. So it also highlights how the BRICS expansion raises some dilemmas, and depending on who wins elections, and also indicates the associations that it is having vis-a-vis other members. So even though Argentina was invited to join, if this candidate wins the elections, it will put the BRICS in a tough situation.
So great.
Just some of the dynamics to follow in the coming.
Great. And more to come then. We will keep updated. Eric, thanks a lot for this interesting and very comprehensive conversation. To be honest, I learned a lot about this development, and it is added value and the future prospects as well. Thank you very much, everyone, for listening to us. Please follow us in the favorite podcast channels. And thank you so much, Eric, again for your great discussion. It was a great pleasure to having you today again.
Pleasure to be here, and looking forward to the next one.